welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to the Spring Thoughts Edition. As the Gophers are now through the spring game, just happened this past Saturday, much to the chagrin of many Gopher fans who weren't able to attend. But we have, or at least I have seen now, 4 of the 15 practices, and so has our guest today, which is of GophersGuru.com, one of my favorite people and future NFL GM, Daniel House. House, I know that you and I have spent many of these practices together, hemming and hawing and trying to figure out who, quote unquote, our guys are from this team, but I figured we would wait to record an episode until after you and I have enough data points, which I'd argue 4 of the 15 probably isn't enough. But for what we get here in the local media, that's what we get. But we appreciate you having at least you coming on the podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having me. At spring ball, it's hard to get a read, like you said, with 4 practices, and it's just so developmental. But especially the spring game, I'm like, man, this is as vanilla as it gets. Not many concepts being shown, which is good for strategy, and everybody does it. So well, you're not going to get much more than vanilla ice cream, I guess, you know?
What I would say, too, is 3 of the practices that House and I were at, there was no tackling. And then there was the spring game where it's the most vanilla ice cream of all of the practices where they're showing 10 plays. They're not blitzing. There was no snap. There was no pre-snap motion or anything. So we don't have the full data set, but we at least have seen more Gopher football practices than probably anybody else listening to this podcast. So I figure that Luke can help us play mediator today.
I will do my best, but I do think we have some unfinished business, fellas, as we do every year since 2021, so super long time. We do a Big Ten honors draft at the beginning of the season. Daniel, you haven't been on in a while with us, and so we need to go over who won this. And unfortunately, I have to announce that it was Ryan Burns. So just to recap the draft here, folks, and kind of the criteria, this was before the season started. And how we do the scoring is you get 5 points for a first team unanimous player, 4 points for a first team coaches or media. You get 3 points for the second team, and 2 points for the third team, 1 point for honorable mention. So Daniel, you had a very clear first choice and you took John Michael Schmitz. That got you 5 points. Congratulations. Anything? I mean, you have to be really proud of that.
The lowest of low hanging fruits, by the way.
I mean,
that was the easiest pick ever. That's like just running to the podium with that one.
But the thing is, you don't want to overthink it, and you didn't, and I'm proud of you. You did great there, okay?
But then it fell apart.
pretty drastically. I took Tyler Newbin, number 2. He only got me 3 points at 2 teams. I kind of feel robbed personally. Ryan, you got a first team unanimous with Mo. Anything you want to say about that pick? And just, I mean, it was very obvious I should have taken it. This would have gotten me the victory. But obviously I overthought it a little bit at number 2 with Tyler Newbin. Still think I got robbed.
Well, let me tell you, here is the winning GM of this draft. When I saw that the value was there, and this is NFL draft week, that Mohamed Ibrahim, one of the greatest running backs in the history of the program, was there at 3 overall, Luke, I didn't run. I didn't sprint. I absolutely galloped to the podium to make that easy selection.
All right. He looked like Mac Jones coming up to the Goodell Barola hug at the draft.
My unathletic self.
All right. Then coming back, you took your man crush, Brevin Span Ford. That got you 1 point with honorable mention.
Which is so BS, because the fact that he is like the number 2 tight end in the country via Pro Football Focus, and the man can't even get third team all Big Ten. Popularity contest, yeah, man.
There's definitely some politics in this. This is where things really started to fall apart for me, kind of. I threw a dart and it just didn't hit. Let's just be honest. Dalen Wright got me no points. Justin Wally got you robbed there, Daniel House. I think you should have gotten at least an honorable mention. Unfortunately, he didn't get one. Then you got hit with the injury bug with Chris Ottman Bell. Sorry to hear that. And then starts the interesting. I had D'Angelo Carter, Trill Carter, rest in peace to him as he's moved on to grassier pastures in Texas. He got me 1 point in the honorable mention. And then Ryan Burns, Thomas Rush got you a point, one whole point.
Well, it's one more whole point than your guy. I think the fans would have agreed with you before the season that Dalen Wright goes fifth overall, but now TCU wide receiver Dalen Wright.
Oh, yeah.
It just, as his Minnesota tenure will show, just never clicked, but he helped them beat Wisconsin twice. And so I don't know that they beat Wisconsin without Dalen Wright the last 2 years. And you know what? I think many Gopher fans will take that.
All right. Then an injured Tanner Morgan got you no points. You know, the winningest quarterback in Gopher history. You know, maybe if he stays healthy, he can get an honorable mention nod there. But he
and now listener of the podcast, by the way, he really? Stopped me at Pro Day and said he started to listen to these. And Tanner, for the love of God, number one, congratulations on becoming a future father. But number two,
no way, seriously?
I can't wait. If Tanner, if you're listening to this, I'm going to need the takes in the DMs or the text messages.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Then I took Ariante Ursary. That got me 1 point. I feel really strong about that pick going into this next year. Maybe I was 1 year early. Then House, you took Potts. That was probably your worst take, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I thought it'd be a high volume run, man.
Yeah.
He was like, well, if Mo goes down, it'll be Potts. So.
Well, that was kind of the logic. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, good.
What if something happens to Mo, or, you know, you don't know how Mo's coming back. I don't know.
Yeah. It was good. I don't hate the logic, especially in the world of like fantasy. But this is a, you know, honorable mention, or not honorable mention, a Big Ten honor. So yeah, big swing and a miss there. Then you took Ryan Stapp, who is now seemingly quit football. So that's where you went from like as high could be to about as low could be there, House. No shade to Ryan Stapp if you decide to, you no longer want to play football. All to you. Then I took Mariano Sori Marin. He got me 2 points as a third teamer. You know, and really his career was really taken off in the world of social media hosting. The guy, let's say, he can lead a social media campaign, especially if he's taking you around the state fair. That was killer. I was really proud of him for getting me 2 points. And then I narrowly missed. And then, Ryan, you know what sealed the deal for you, right, to beat me by 1 point?
Who is Mr. Irrelevant?
Terrell Smith. Now about to be drafted into the NFL. Terrell Smith, the guy who I have lauded and praised for never giving up on himself and continue to bet on himself. And you never gave up on him either, Ryan Burns. He got you the 1 point win over me in our Big Ten honors draft.
Well, it's, you know, as I walk up to the podium here, I just want to say this is where I belong on top. And I can't wait to make sure that when we do this draft again in August, that I continue to take Mr. Fall Camp, whoever it was, because that's why I picked Tea Time. Was he had himself a heck of a fall camp. It finally carried over. And I'm just mad that, you know, I think about the scoring system here. None of us got Axel Rushmeyer, Chuck Filiaga.
Yeah.
You know, Jordan Howden. So we've got some things left to clean up, boys.
But House, if we're able to pull off some sort of live event this year, will you do this live with us, with people?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I want to do this in person so we can get some people to actually react.
They're going to boo us.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be very fun.
Well, see, I'm going to pick Crooms, because then I won't know if the fans are booing me or not.
No, there you go.
That's so good.
Look at you, huh?
All right. So the goal now is to organize a live event. We'll have to try and do that. We haven't done that since 2019. And then House, we will draft with you at the live event. I think that would be very fun.
Oh yeah, I'm down. Let's do it.
All right, cool. All right, so let's get into breaking down the offense here in the spring portion of the season. As you guys noted, the spring can be basically a wild card. It can kind of tell you nothing or tell you a lot. You know, sometimes Ryan Burns will start to take It will start to formulate opinions about players, maybe like Hank Ekpe in the spring, which comes out to be just a complete whiff. And then there's other like really bad takes that come out of the spring, but there are also some very good takes that come out of the spring. And these are what we're here for, guys. We're not going to hold you to any of this, right? We're not going to make fun of you into the future. That's never happened, even on this episode of the podcast. That'll never happen. But on offense, I think to start, we got to get your thoughts. It all starts up front, right? And we know you got to see no tackling. So tell us about the offensive line, boys. What did you see, Mr. Ryan Burns?
Well, we finally saw, I think the biggest thing House and I would probably lead with is from what we actually learned is that Brian Callahan's willing to move Quinn Carroll inside to guard. Something to where the first practice we were at, he was rotating between tackle and guard. And then subsequently moving forward, I don't know that I saw him take another snap at tackle after practice one that we were at. The subsequent three practices, and then I think in the spring game, he only got snaps at right guard, which we have talked for a long time on this podcast about Quinn Carroll at tackle last season, where I think he was above average as a run blocker, and I think he was below average as a pass protector. And that's where moving him inside to combat those defensive tackles instead of the defensive ends in the Big Ten, I think is a great move. Again, I think his best part of his game is run blocking. And if you move him inside, I think that's certainly going to help. Now, House, what did you think of, or at least the move that appears to be on paper, of moving Quinn Carroll inside?
Yeah, I felt like that was a good fit last year. I projected that it probably would happen, that Quinn would move inside just because of how it fits his skill set, wider body type with good length and a great run blocker, like you said. I thought he improved significantly over the course of last season too, just adjusting to the rigor of playing in the Big Ten and learning the technique and not playing all that much football in the past just because of injuries and being at Notre Dame and just getting here and adjusting. So I thought that was possibly going to happen, and it looks like it will. But, you know, it's also good to have the flexibility that Quinn can play tackle if something happens with an injury or you don't feel quite comfortable with how things progress in the fall. He has the experience to confidently go out there and play tackle too. So, I mean, it the spring it was smart to get him reps inside. So in the event he does have to do that, he has experience at both positions.
Well, I'd also say if it's not going to be Quinn Carroll at right tackle, which it appears it won't be, the two guys getting a lot of snaps, there were Martez Lewis and J.J. Gidey. I feel like we've been talking about these guys for a long time because we have. I think they're years 4 and 5 now heading into the program, but they both have different strengths, both have different weaknesses. I think for J.J. Gidey, he's been finally healthy again. You know, he's dealt with nagging injuries seemingly for a few years now, but he was healthy here for an entire spring. And then Martez Lewis, I would say, was probably the front runner of the two right now, but if you had to compare and contrast Martez Lewis and J.J. Gidey, House, what would you say?
I would say Martez Lewis, the size, and for a guy with the length that he has, he's able to bend really well. And I think that's one of the things that he's improved a ton is just being able to maintain that consistency in that area of not playing upright, being able to absorb rushers and prove his lateral agility and just all the components of his skill set. So Martez, when you look at him, you go, this is a Brian Callahan prototype right tackle, just body type wise. Now J.J. Gidey comes in here and is just super athletic. I mean, he was someone that just needed to get in the strength program, get bigger. And then, like you said, getting hit with the injury bug there. And then, you know, just sort of not being able to get those reps to take the next step in his development. So again, I have a tough time, you know, evaluating offensive line play in the spring, just because I think it's all about fundamentals and technique and getting a feel for, you know, where guys can play and what combinations you want to try heading into the fall camp. So, you know, I believe they're positioned quite well. They have some options, and that's a good thing because they've been developing those guys behind the scenes a bit, and now they get their chance to compete in fall camp, and that's where the jobs are won, is in the fall. So we'll see where they're at.
I think that's the thing that I would tell people is we're going to give our thoughts, but it's there were so many – I think this spring more than any other, House, is there were as many different first-team offensive line combinations as I've ever seen a Brian Callahan unit have over the course of 6-8 weeks because, you know – I would say the two positions that are set in stone, or I think are set in stone, are Arianta Airstreet at left tackle for the second straight year. Quinn Carroll slides into guard. I think that's going to be the best move for this offensive line in the short and long term. We talked about right tackle, but like the left guard and center spots, there were consistently two, three guys rotating there. I mean, at left guard, it was Tyler Cooper in his fifth year, and then Carter Shaw and Nathan Bowe in their 6 years, and those were the same two guys in Bowe and Shaw that were rotating at center. So we're talking about between right tackle and left guard and center, 8-9 guys rotating along that offensive line. And I don't envy Brian Callahan to that extent, because, or even the guys that are on the offensive line, because if you got a brand new guy next to you each and every rep, and communication up front is obviously a huge thing, it's just a lot of different moving parts. But from what you saw from someone like Nathan Bowe, someone that has been in the program a long time, someone that you and I both know has been talked about by this coaching staff here in the spring. I mean, there's obviously going to be a step down from John Michael Schmitz to anyone, but if you had to kind of, I guess, cap the race at center right now, what do you think?
Or I'd say early on, it's probably Nathan Bowe, just because of his experience as well. He played well when he got in there last year, and heard a lot of good things from players that I've done stories with talking about Nathan Bowe, how much he's improved over the course of his career. Like, his name probably came up a couple of times when I was doing stuff last year, that everyone said Nathan's going to get his chance and take advantage of it. So behind the scenes, you know, it seems like he's someone that has a lot of respect from teammates, which is something that I noted. And it depends. I mean, you got to figure out left guard. Is Nathan Bowe, you know, or Carter Shaw, which way are they going to go, left guard or center? And then you've got Tyler Cooper in the mix as well. I mean, that if you want to have some uncertainty at a position, it's probably best to have it at left guard, just based on some of the research that I've done on, you know, the values of positions, that I think left guard is the one that you want to have some uncertainty at.
Which you and I talked about that this spring, and I think it would be good for the listeners to hear that. Is, I know the thing that you told me was, from the data you've looked at and the studies you've read, maybe I shouldn't say the least important position, or how do you want to characterize left guard and what we had discussed here at a spring practice?
It's based on how the defenses are playing right now, you know, how they're playing, setting up their fronts, that left guard is a position that maybe isn't as valued as the other ones along the offensive line. So
is it just because, you know, of what it's asked to do? When you say that it's the way the defenses are playing, what is it about left guard that I guess makes it arguably the least valuable position among the five?
Well, you got a lot of teams that are just attacking downhill in the gaps now. And, you know, you got some teams that want to create mismatches at guard occasionally. But I think, you know, you look at the ability to, you know, kind of hide that player. That's something that a lot of offensive schemes are starting to do, just based on the types of defensive fronts they're seeing with the tight fronts and getting the 3-3-5 action now. You got to remember that, because you got your 3-3-5. You got your guy shaded in the four eye, which is just over the inside shoulder of the tackle. And then you got your nose tackle lined over the zero tech. And then you got your other four eye over the inside shoulder of the other tackle. So there's not even anybody aligned directly over the guard. So that's what I mean when I'm saying, like, teams that run that tight front, it's totally different than when you're running like a 4-3 front where you got a 3 tech on you. You know, that it's different in that sense, that, you know, they're dealing more with, you know, downhill attacking blitzers and things like that.
Well, how this applies too is, I believe Wisconsin's new defense is going to be a 3-3-5. You can correct me if I'm wrong, House. And then I think Nebraska's is supposed to be as well, right?
Yeah, Nebraska's will be more of a pure 3-3-5 is the way it sounds. But Wisconsin, they have a little bit of a unique way they do it, to have overhang defenders sort of in the passing lane windows. And it's, they're going to be multiple defensively is sort of my understanding with Wisconsin. So, you know, at 3-3-5, I believe the low key thing that gives Minnesota an advantage is bringing in Nick Monroe, who worked with Tony White at Syracuse and has been tutored in and developed up in the 3-3-5, that he can give some perspective on what things work, what things don't work versus 3-3-5s, and that could give Minnesota a little bit of an edge when they're trying to game plan.
Luke, do you like the rabbit holes that, because this is just like a conversation that House and I would have at a spring practice as we're standing on the sidelines. You like these rabbit holes we go down?
I like the rabbit hole. I've never heard the like you might value a left guard less than a right guard. Obviously, we've always heard that you value a left tackle probably most, right, on the offensive line. They seem to get paid well in the NFL. I guess maybe House, just one last question kind of on offensive line. Does the value of like an offensive line position differ from college to the pros? Because I think most people have a hard time, drawing a line in the sand between the two, right? And just how do they, across the offensive line, how do they look at value differently?
I would say it's pretty similar, actually, because, you know, defensive football and how teams are scheming and doing things up front. I feel like now there's some, you know, everything is evolving from the college game a bit. I think there's some things that teams are taking in the NFL and applying from college as well. So, right, you know, the values aren't all that different. I mean, I was just reading an in-depth study on, you know, that type of stuff, and I was fascinated by it.
No, yeah, okay, that makes sense. You guys got any parting thoughts here on offensive line? Otherwise, I do want to move to a position group that was really deep during the spring here, and that would be running back. I hear that they've got a lot of depth, a lot of guys got carries, etc. Or I might be completely wrong about that. I'm not sure. I didn't read a lot of Gopher Illustrated here during the spring. Well, that's kind of
always makes me feel good, Luke. Yeah. The only thing I would say, offensive line wise, I want to touch on two more guys because I know Daniel and I agree on them. They're two young guys, both are freshmen. One's been here 3 months and the other one's been here 10 months.
Before you get into that, Ryan, I just have to interrupt you here. Can we confidently say that you have a new Gopher Gridiron Radio man crush?
I don't know that I've moved on from Brevin yet in terms of having someone that has a lock on my heart, obviously Brevin did, but I would be very curious to know, hear who you think I'm.
I think you should continue with who these two guys are and then I'll state it. It might be last name Nelson, but continue.
Yeah. I mean, for a long time, I thought that Tony Nelson from Tracy, Minnesota had a lot of characteristics that screamed to be a future Big Ten player. And that's where it's been so fun to watch his development house from fall camp, from small town Minnesota football, one of the best throwers in the state of Minnesota, to see how he developed even throughout the spring. Now, I would agree with Luke that I obviously have an affinity for Tony Nelson, and he worked at second team left tackle throughout the entire spring. So if you had to kind of characterize the development you saw from Tony, where did you see his game kind of grow the most here in the last 6 months?
Well, I mean, just the movement skills were always there. I remember going to the summer camps and being very impressed with just all the upside and ability to, you know, in the lower half of the flexibility to mirror and absorb rushers, and then also just to beat defensive linemen to their spot. And Tony Nelson had all those traits. It was just all about the hand technique and all the components, the stance, everything, the feet, all those things tying together to develop him up. And now with being around Cali and getting in the development side of the system, you're starting to see those flashes of what he can become. And that having that athleticism is super intriguing. I mean, you look at the guys that you want to target at the tackle spot, they got to have that above average athleticism and movement skills. And Tony Nelson definitely checks that box. So he's someone that fans will become very familiar with in the future here.
The other guy I wanted to mention is someone that I've written a few different times this spring that I think Brian Callahan, the offensive line coach for Minnesota, has taken the training wheels off more than any other true freshman I think I've seen in the Fleck era here, and that's Greg Johnson from Prior Lake, someone who we at 24/7 Sports said is a four-star player. And it was so interesting to kind of hear, because I think either you or I asked Callahan about his thoughts on Greg Johnson so far, and I think he said something along the lines of, I don't want to anoint him, but he's doing things that are making you go, for a true freshman, boy. And again, even seeing him go against some of these more experienced defensive tackles, I mean, he certainly, to me, as someone that should be going to prom next week, stood out throughout the spring. But what did you think about Greg Johnson here and your first impression of him in a Gopher uniform?
Well, I've always said that the quick feet of Greg Johnson are the most impressive trait that he has. For a player with his size coming in here and being physically in a position where this coaching staff feels like he could potentially help in a capacity, that just says a lot. But it's also the mental side of it. I've heard a lot of really good things about his ability to process information, pick things up. I remember being at camps watching both him and Tony Nelson.
Yeah,
and it was like they go through this one-on-one period with the O-line, D-line, and you watch this rep, didn't get the hands right, you know, just screwed up something fundamentally. And then Callie makes that adjustment. And then the next rep, it's like that. That's exactly how it's supposed to look.
Right.
And so that ability to process information, like I watch all that stuff when I'm at camps. Like, how does this guy respond to coaching? What does it look like once the rep's been corrected? And both of those players were able to do that at a high level. And that says a lot about their ability to retain and develop and continue to, you know, maximize their ceilings, which are obviously very high.
Essentially, how much do they get better from rep 1 to rep 10? Are they getting beat on the same things or are they not? And I fully agree with House Luke that those two guys specifically, two Minnesota guys, I think they are going to be stalwarts along this offensive line in the coming years.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I just want to highlight as you guys are talking, like you're really excited about a couple young guys. But it's nice to also know, again, this is another year of pretty significant transition on the offensive line. But You've got a number of guys that are older in the program, and that's one sign of maturation of a program in general, right? This is what PJ's eighth year? Is it going to be year eight, Ryan?
Year seven.
Okay.
Seven.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But in general, like you're starting to see, you know, some older guys, and now all this is kind of a wrench has kind of been thrown into this, you know, with the transfer portal in general, and we can't speculate necessarily who's going to stay or who's going to go, but it's nice to be able to look to a guy like Nathan Bowe that's going to be in year six or, you know, go down the line, the number of guys that they have. And you can always shore stuff up in the transfer portal and try and find experience. But there, you know, none of that is a for sure thing. So I think this is a testament to Brian Callahan and staff of, you know, how they're able to adjust. It's going to be interesting to see ultimately how good this offensive line is, given how good the previous offensive lines have been. But it's exciting to hear you talk about mature guys being able to step in and then young guys that you're really high on as well.
Yeah, I mean, you look across the five starters that'll likely be there, they're going to be year four and above. I mean, that's where I want to be in year seven of a Big Ten program, even as much as I do like Tony Nelson and Greg Johnson and some of the younger guys there. If you're going to have success against the Illinois front sevens in a, you know, in the Big Ten, you have to be old and you have to be a little bit experienced. So it's going to be very interesting to kind of see how it all settles come Nebraska.
All right. So let's again get back to my joke and talk about the very depleted running back room and what you guys were able to take away. Probably the most you were able to take away here was in the spring game, right? Where Zach Evans was able to shine a little bit. But in general, this is a group that was hampered by injury. But there's obviously a lot of turnover here, and we should talk about, you know, what you guys saw and then maybe even have to do a little bit of projecting.
Well, I think the thing I would say is it was just good to see Darius Taylor and Zach Evans healthy, House, because I think for at least two of the practices, they didn't practice. Darius got banged up, and so did Zach. And it's so tough to evaluate running backs also, even if they were healthy, where there's no tackling. I mean, I don't know what's a big gain, what's would have been a one-yard run. But from what you, I guess, saw from those two young guys in the spring game, House, I mean, yeah, we know it's going to be Sean Tyler getting 15 to 18 touches a game is kind of that slasher type. But from what you've seen from Zach Evans and Darius Taylor here, at least in the last 8 weeks, what do you think?
Zach Evans just basically solidified what I saw when I watched him in high school, was the one cut runner who will thrive in that outside zone where he can get downhill very fast. But then what's special about his game is the ability to make the second and third level defenders miss. You saw it a couple of times, yeah, you know, safety in space, makes a miss. He's got that shake when he hits the second level, but can maintain acceleration. And so I saw that on film a ton, making defenders miss, making that first defender miss, but also having the vision and the patience to find that crease. And when you do, put the foot in the ground and go. That those traits right there all fit what Minnesota likes to do with their blocking scheme. So Zach Evans, I see a very high ceiling there. I thought physically he's gotten bigger. That was something that they wanted to, you know, emphasize, was just getting stronger and bigger. And so that's something I noticed. I thought Darius Taylor ran with some nice physicality. I mean, yeah, he, downhill running with good pad level a couple times. I'm like, man, he showed me more physicality than I was anticipating in person, especially in those live periods, being on the field for the spring game, getting a chance to see how he runs through contact, that moment where he lowered his shoulder with Aiden Goosby and both of them. I mean, both of them shooting downhill very fast, and he's able to, you know, pack a punch there. And I mean, it was interesting hearing the guys on the sideline talk about the physicality of some of the players that are in front of us, talk about the physicality of Darius Taylor. They're impressed with it too.
Yeah. And so that's where it's going to be interesting to kind of see, because you've also got Bryce Williams there, who's been here a long time. And we're talking about it today on Parent Spare. How long ago does it even feel like that 2018 Wisconsin game was, where Bryce Williams is the one that put it away with a couple of touchdown runs there? So you have those four. I mean, I think Jordan Newbin and Max Grand can maybe help you down the line. But I still think, I don't know that we learned a lot about this running back room, about who is going to be behind Sean Tyler, because it's just been, it's been injured. Now, again, they were healthy enough to play in the spring game, but we've seen with Zach Evans, you know, he gets injured in fall camp, misses most of the next couple of months, comes in, gets a touchdown against Northwestern, I think it was, misses some time here this spring. It's just about staying healthy for him. And then for Darius, for as much as a slasher as we both think that Sean Tyler is going to be, that physicality, because it's so weird to me. You know, Darius Taylor is another guy that should be going to prom next week. And you and I have stood next to him a few different times. I don't know what they're feeding these teenage kids in high school anymore, House, but Sean. Darius Taylor doesn't exactly look like someone that needs to add a lot more weight. He's very much put together, and I think you saw that on Saturday. So I still think there's a lot that they have to figure out, running back coach Nick McKissick-Luke, that is, in terms of how many guys are getting carries, because Sean Tyler's not going to be a Mo Ibrahim type that gets 30, 35 touches a game. Even 20, I think, is kind of on the cusp of – too much, because even at Western Michigan, Sean Tyler, he's all MAC twice. He's only got 320 career plus carry games. I mean, he's a guy that you want to get 15 to 18 times a game, which still leaves another 18 to 20 touches for running back. So I still think, Luke, there's a lot that has to be decided here yet in that running back position.
Yeah. I mean, the question I think you've set up nicely is a PJ Fleck-led team capable of distributing the carries, right? That we haven't seen that when they had basically an all-generation running back in Mo Ibrahim.
I mean, we saw it 19 with Mo, that's true, with Shannon, and Rodney.
Yeah, to a certain extent.
But I just don't think there's going to be a single guy in this room that is going to be your bell cow. I think it's going to be at least three guys that are going to get meaningful reps on a Saturday. Would you disagree, House?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, too, where I believe the backs will be more involved in the passing game as well. Extension of the rushing attack, which I think is very important to create more yards after the catch, make defenses defend every inch of the field. That's something that I would anticipate is more featured in the offense. It's just a hunch based on the skill sets that they have and the types of things that, you know, I feel watching a lot of college football, getting ready for the draft, that one of the biggest opportunities right now is getting your backs involved in the passing game. And, you know, it's one of those things where I always say it's like the least defended position on the field, just because it's difficult to defend it. It's difficult to get a good angle on it when you're trying to, when you got guys matched up even in man-to-man coverage on it. Like, you can generate a lot of yardage just by getting it out to your backs and coming up with route designs that are creative for your backs. I think that's an opportunity, not just through the screens, but just route designs as well. And I've looked back at Minnesota, you know, what they've done with their screen game in the past. And, you know, there's definitely opportunity there to potentially, you know, maximize what some of these guys do best and also add another dimension to the offense.
You're being very polite there, House. I mean, their running back screen game or pass game was more or less non-existent. So outside of, you know, there was the really, really nice Bucky Irving, you know, could have been touchdown against Wisconsin, were huge play there. But I mean, largely that was non-existent. And I would love to see them add this dimension to this offense with Kirk Schrock now gone. You know, maybe they'll actually incorporate the running back a little bit more.
I think House and I can't say a ton there, but I would say that they, from what the practices we were at, I anticipate the screen game being more involved. Mm-hmm. I anticipate more running backs getting touches in the passing game. It's almost like maybe they hired somebody in Andrew Soder, who comes from Kent State, where the screen game was very, very prevalent. Mm-hmm. And it's something to where I'm not telling you it's going to be noticeable. Well, it probably will be, considering how many times, I'm sure, House, you know this, how many times in the Shiraka era did Minnesota roughly run a screen?
Well, you go back and you look at the numbers. I got them here. Hang on a second.
Of course. No one else besides Daniel House, by the way. I could probably give you a general number. He's actually tracked this.
Is so 28, like 25 times? It's about 28 screen passes per season.
That even feels like a lot to me.
Those are largely like
like a tunnel screen
or a bubble screen. Yeah.
Right. We're talking about back running back screens. That's something that I got to go back and track.
Yeah. I don't think it's particularly many.
It can't be more than a handful. But yeah. I feel a screen's a screen to me.
It's a screen, right.
And I think you want everybody, you know, you want all your offensive linemen to release out on screens. You want to get screens to your tight ends, your wide receivers, your backs. It makes it hard to defend you because you're spreading the ball around. And, you know, people talk about balance, and you know, there's a lot of that 50-50 and all that. I think it's more about getting the ball to all your playmakers to create space in the passing game and forcing the defense to have to adjust to those things. So I believe one of the biggest opportunities right now in college football is coming up with ways to get your guys the ball in space, and that's through screens. And you look at what Kent State did there. I mean, the numbers are significant in favor of getting the ball out in space. And I think that's what made them unique, was sort of that Big Ten physicality melded with sort of the up-tempo spread with the screens and getting the ball out in space. So that's one area that I think will be important. I'll be writing about it at some point, what I think could potentially work there.
So in 279 pass attempts on the season, they threw 28 screens. So that's
between tunnels and bubbles.
Between largely probably tunnels and bubbles.
That was over the past 5 years, it says.
Okay. Mine was just the 2022. So that's like the percentage is even lower.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Like even if you threw a screen, you know, 6 to 8% of the time would be probably a drastic increase. So yeah. That's a good point. All right, let's talk a little bit about the tight end position before we talk about wide receivers and quarterbacks. Brevin Spans Ford did not participate in spring ball this year. Obviously, Ryan would like to be opining about him, but he will not have the opportunity given that he was out. So familiarize us, fellas, with some of the other guys, you know, that have gotten some meaningful reps, but also are going to be having larger roles this coming season, even though Brevin will be back.
I don't know that I have a ton of tight end takes because, again, with no tackling and just kind of the way that was structured here this spring, that I don't know that I got a ton of tight end takes, and that kills me as the former collegiate tight end of the podcast. But I mean, do you have any Jamison Gears or Nick Callerup or Nathan Jones takes for us, House?
Tight end's a lot like, you know, I always say safety and linebacker and tight end and non-contact practices are more difficult to evaluate. But I just will say overall, I think there's a lot of opportunity just formationally to do some things with Brevin, just because of how unique his skill set is and some of the things that they can do with the personnel that they have in the passing game now. I think the sky is really the limit to feature him in a creative way too.
All right. So that was the quickest position group we've gone through.
Just so difficult to evaluate tight end during these spring practices because Brevin's not playing.
Right.
I mean, Keller up in Gears. I think will be two guys that get reps, but it's just so tough to evaluate for us in the media for what we see.
Well, yeah, and it's the whole sample size of how many practices you're at too, you know, and what they're doing at those practices.
Yeah. All right. So let's revisit this in the fall. Hopefully we're drafting and one or two of these guys are going to be surefire Big Ten honoree draft picks. All right. We'll get back to it later. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the wide receiver position. Obviously a lot of turnover here, right? You've got a couple of guys coming in. You've got a couple of guys going out. You've got a couple of guys returning. So there's a lot to probably cover here. You know, word on the street is this Elijah Spencer guy is like pretty good at football. This Daniel Jackson kid's pretty good at football. They're probably going to throw the ball a little bit more. So help fill in those details for us, fellas.
I mean, I asked Matt Simon when we got him, Minnesota's wide receiver coach, that is this the deepest receiver room you've had in your 7 years? And he agreed. And now I would agree with him when he said this isn't as top end talent heavy as it was in 19, where you had Bateman and Johnson. But it's something to where you can go. I mean, Lamecki Brockington is probably your wide receiver 4 or 5 in this room if everybody's healthy, because you got Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, as you said. I mean, Chris Ottman Bell's still there. You have Lamecki. You have Kristen Hoskins, who I think can make an impact. Corey Crooms is also there. And then we haven't even mentioned Brevin Spanford. I mean, I think this is going to be the deepest that they've been. And that's where, you know, if we want to just stick with wide receiver, I mean, I think if we're going to say, you know, of this group, who I think my guy is, I'm going to go with Elijah Spencer. Now, I mean, he lit up the spring game, but he did that house at like every practice we were at. Now, that shouldn't surprise a ton of people. I mean, he was a very good group of five receiver, but you didn't know how it was going to translate to the Big Ten. But he certainly opened eyes, I think, each practice we were at there.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, he wasn't the group of five, but the numbers supported it too, of him being so talented against man coverage. And that was one of the things that I felt was very important, was getting a receiver who averaged solid yards per route run versus man coverage. And he was very good in that area. I wrote about that on the site recently, just how much value that can add. And he was very good at moving the sticks, picking up first downs. He was one of the better receivers at that, you know, just being able to target him when you need to get a first down, that's the guy you're turning toward. I think one of the special traits with him is just lower half flexibility, being able to drop his weight coming in and out of breaks. He sells and decels out of breaks well, and then also being able to make plays on the ball in contested situations, getting body positioning, all those things I saw on film, and then being able to see him in person. There's one route in the spring game. It happened like right in front of me, and the way he set the route up, I wrote about it on the site, all of the details that he executed in that specific rep, I'm like, okay, he's definitely got some nuance to his game, and I already saw flashes of that. So definitely someone that will help Minnesota's passing attack. I believe wide receiver might be one of the strengths of the team right now, top to bottom. I mean, it's amazing what they're able to do through acquisitions to make that group better, and then also continue to develop some of the guys that they had in there last year as well.
Well, that's where I want to make the point, Luke, that if I'm a Minnesota Gopher football fan right now and I'm listening to this, and I would say the biggest thing that I would have people take away from this offense is it's going to look markedly different from what you remember the 2022 version to be under Kirk Schrock, a Tanner Morgan, and Mo Ibrahim. You have a new guy calling the plays. Whether that's Greg Harbaugh or whether that's Matt Simon, I think if you went to a Gopher football practice, it was pretty clear about who was wearing the headset and calling the plays there. But you've got your strengths go from your running back and your offensive line, which they were in 2022, to now your strengths are your quarterback and your pass catchers. Because we mentioned it. I mean, I think we'll get to Ethan here in a bit, or even the development of Cole Kramer this spring, I think, is one of the storylines too. But your strengths have essentially flipped, where on the outside, your starters are either Daniel Jackson, Chris Ottman Bell, Elijah Spencer, and Lamecki Brockington in the slot. You upgrade immensely with Corey Crooms and I think Kristen Hoskins there. And we're not even talking about Brevin Spanford there. Like, this is a team that I think they passed more than any other team in the Fleck era here at Minnesota, because that's the way that this offense is structured. If you're going to play to your strengths, your strengths are your passing game, House.
Yeah, that's what I said. You know, it's again, you got to have playmakers all over the place that you can move in different places. Like, there are so many options just with versatility, because you can put Daniel Jackson in the slot. He can play outside. You could even put Spence in the slot, put him on the outside. You know, Crooms is going to be a really good player at just sudden, get open at the top of routes, give you value in the screen game, yards after the catch, and also you can throw like a slot fade to him. He was really good downfield and balls of 20 plus yards. Both him and Spencer were very good in that respect. So it tells you that they're able to get separation vertically as well as doing it underneath. So I look at those guys, and then you know, got Chris Ahmed Bell. I mean, the way this receiver room is positioned, there are a lot of guys that do different things well, which is good. And then you combine the tight end group with Brevin Spanford, who is extremely unique in that you can stretch the seam with him. You can get a lot of stuff going underneath, because if defenses are trying to take away one guy, you know, there are options to get your other playmakers involved. And so I feel like the best offenses, they're all able to have a lot of different playmakers that put threats on the defense, and then they're able to generate space in the passing game by getting all of those playmakers involved. And I wrote about it recently. My approach, I like to call it multidimensional offense. And I feel like with the playmakers that they have in the receiver room at tight end and at quarterback, that they'll be able to do some things maybe a bit different than Gopher fans are typically accustomed to seeing. I wouldn't say it's going to be seismic in any means. Like, there will still be the RPO elements, but like, there are ways that you can build off of that, do some things that put stress on defenses.
Maybe such as shifts and motions, which is something that we haven't seen a ton from of a Kirk Ciarrocca offense at Minnesota. But I think that's something to where I don't know how frequent it'll be when it ultimately becomes Thursday night against Nebraska. But I think shifts and motions is going to be something that's an important element of this Minnesota offense, Luke.
You know, Minnesotans tend to be a little bit skeptical, and they've seen a lot of not passing the ball. So hearing this, I think a lot of people probably – maybe didn't even make it this far and just turned it off and were like, you know what, guys, I don't buy it. But, you know, this is part of what the transfer portal era, and, you know, also the fact that you can get a quarterback who is very obviously, you know, the strength of his game is throwing the ball and having a strong arm, how your offensive identity can, you know, basically change one season to the next. I think this is one of the things that's going to make the portal era fun is, you know, over the next maybe five-ish years while this all kind of figures itself out. But the Gophers were able to get a lot better quickly, because if you think back to last year, House, the Gophers struggled in man coverage, period. They couldn't get open. Mm-hmm. And now you're talking about a guy like Elijah Spencer, you know, in the maturation of some of these guys. And the reality, too, was a lot of these guys didn't have a diverse route tree outside of Daniel Jackson, right? You know, you think about Dalen Wright. He was basically two routes, and that was it. And I hear you guys saying, no, there's going to be, you know, multifaceted receivers and, you know, it'll all come together. But, man, this sounds just so drastically different than what we've seen. And frankly, I am skeptical, because I've watched a PJ Fleck-led team for the last 6 years, and he is very risk-averse. But I'm interested to see this development for sure.
I mean, that's where I get the skepticism from you. I'm sure many of the people listening to this are like, I'll believe it when I see it, Ryan and Daniel. You're just more of this maroon and gold hype machine.
I'm not trying to say it's maroon and gold hype machine. I think it's just I don't think it's that at all.
I would just say, like, I think people don't give coaches enough credit sometimes. And that's where I get that for largely the last 6 years, they've just seen a run game that has rivaled the service academies, but that's not the strength of this offense. I mean, it's not. It's Ethan and the pass catchers. It's not the running backs. It's not likely the offensive line. It's if Minnesota is going to put up points offensively this season, House, if they don't have a passing game in that game, this isn't 2022 anymore. They're going to struggle.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, you got to look at what your personnel is like year to year. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Where is the game going? How can you potentially move in a different direction that, you know, exploit some of the things that your opponents are doing. That's where I think there's also some opportunity as well, based on, you know, now you've got another team in Purdue that will be a cover one, man-to-man coverage heavy team. Illinois will be following the same path. So you got to have guys that can get open. You got those 2-3-3-5 defenses, which will be stylistically, maybe, you know, there's ways to attack that differently through the running game. Like, I see opportunity in terms of being able to innovate and do some things that aren't drastically different, but maybe to the casual fan, but could be impactful, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, that's interesting. So let's get to quarterback. Ryan, you and I talked with Ethan on an episode that was, you know, brought to our listeners by the members of Dinkytown Athletes.
The official sponsor now of the university.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that was fun to talk to him and get to know him a little bit better. And hopefully our listeners got a chance to understand Ethan better and, you know, hear from him firsthand. And, you know, going into the spring, he was QB1, even off injury. The assumption is, even coming out of the spring, he's QB1. Cole Kramer has been hyped up. And I think that's probably fair. We saw in the spring game just how much he's improved, or when given a chance, what he can do. Right. I'm not sure which of that it is, but this is a room that, yeah, you got a guy that transferred, and, you know, you got the freshman that transferred, the kid from South Dakota, but I feel good about this room in general. And you know, I felt good with Ethan, but I feel better now having, you know, seen that spring game with Cole Kramer.
I think let's start with Kramer House. Is I could make the argument, I don't know if you would agree with me or not, that there might be not a more improved player on the offense in the last 4 months than Cole Kramer, or at least from the sample size that we saw. That was the most amount of development I've seen from Cole Kramer in 4 years, and what Harbaugh and Eric Haller and Keegan O'Hara were able to do in 4 months. I mean, he was as consistent from practice to practice as we've seen. I guess, what do you think of that statement?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fair statement. Like, I mean, Cole Kramer's been around this program. He studied defense. He knows coverages. He understands what he's going to see. He's been around Tanner. He's worked with him before. Kirk Sciarca was developing him behind the scenes in ways that maybe we didn't see as much, just because, you know, we aren't at many practices. But I feel like, you know, just from a mental field vision perspective, being able to know where he needs to put the ball, where his receivers are going to be, what the concept is supposed to do, what it's attacking, all of those things come with a product of experience. And Cole maybe hasn't necessarily played, you know, that much action. I mean, more as a wildcat, but being able to sit in those quarterback rooms and learn what, you know, you need to do, where the ball needs to go, and get practice reps in a lot of situations has certainly been beneficial. And I thought, you know, during the spring game, he was accurate, you know, at all three levels. I mean, that was such a basic, you know, they didn't do much coverage wise. They couldn't blitz. Like, the offense was pretty simplistic, but still you got to be able to make those throws and get the ball to the right spot. And it wasn't just like an isolated thing where he looked improved in that session. It was also during other ones as well. So Cole's definitely got the experience that, you know, it will be very valuable in that quarterback room in many ways.
Well, that's where, again, many people just think of him as the wildcat quarterback, because that's all they've really seen him do outside of come in for one drive against Iowa at the end of a game and be kind of a sacrificial lamb. But that leads us into Ethan. And I hate taking a ton from the spring game, House, but I wrote this yesterday. Was I think the spring game kind of perfectly encapsulated what I'm expecting from Ethan Calais-McManus this year, where you're going to see some lows like you did in the first 15 minutes of the game, and that interception was egregious too. But then you saw him largely come back strong and make throws that a Gopher quarterback hasn't made in a long time. And he is going to be the straw that stirs the drink for this Gopher offense. I mean, I've said it before in my 12 years covering this team. I think he's the most physically gifted quarterback that they have. But I think people have to remember he's going into his first full year as the starter. He's learning what throws he can make. He's learning what throws he can't make. And I just think that, I mean, there's going to be games where he'll throw two picks in the first 20 minutes and they're down 14-3. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be games where he throws a couple of just darts where Minnesota's up 14-3 because of Ethan's arm. From what you saw from Ethan this spring across the four practices, do you think I'm off base with kind of that generalization, or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to assess much in the spring, but I look at it as, you know, we saw at the end of last season what the potential was from a physical perspective, being able to make those tight window throws, push the ball downfield vertically, you know, do all the things that you need to do to have a layered offense from RPO to drop back to play action passing. And I think I look at it as when you have a younger quarterback like that, yeah, it takes time in games to learn what works and what doesn't. What type of coverage am I going to see? Each team this year knows that Minnesota has a young quarterback now. So you'll see mixing coverages and doing different things in the back end that maybe, you know, would, you know, be vulnerable to a younger quarterback. So you'll have to learn how to handle those things, how to overcome those certain wrinkles that you might see over the course of the game. But you look at the physical traits, everything that you want to have there is available. It's just now experience putting all the elements together. And you know, in the spring, I mean, this is a valuable time just to get to know what works and what doesn't, what you want to install, how you want to build this thing around what each player does best. So I look at Ethan and go, you know, the upside is there. Now, it you know, like you said, there'll be those moments during the season where it would be like, you know, wow, it's impressive throw, impressive rep. And then there'll be moments where it's like, hey, he's learning. You know, this is a young quarterback. So it's a little bit different than in years past. But, you know, that's why I think fans have to temper their expectations in terms of what it might look like early on when you got a younger quarterback.
Yeah, I think from game one to game 13, you're going to see market improvement from him, and to the point where mm-hmm. I mean, he's going to start to get some love nationally going into that 2024 season. It's just how quickly can Ethan adapt? Because that's September and August. Those first five games mm-hmm. for Minnesota are daunting. I mean, with Nebraska, North Carolina, and Northwestern's always got a good defense. You've got you know, a MAC team in Eastern Michigan that was a bowl team a year ago. Louisiana Lafayette is nothing to sniff at. I mean, it's something to where he's going to be thrown into the fire right away. And there's going to be highs, people. There's going to be lows. But I think from game one to game 13, you're going to see Ethan make some throws that you haven't seen a Gopher quarterback make in some time. And I will continue to say he is going to be the straw that stirs the drink of this offense. Last year it was Mo. This year it's going to be the Greek rifle.
All right, so that probably wraps up this offensive edition of the spring breakdown. Any parting words before we sign off, fellas?
House, you want to plug anything at Gophers Guru?
Yeah, you can just check out the content on the site, gophersguru.com. I got a lot of different studies I'll be putting out this offseason, things that I've done in the past. So you can head over and check that out. The subscription package is $5 a month, so that's where you can find it.
I am a subscriber for House.
I was going to say, House, it's $5. You realize that there's like rampant inflation that's been happening of late, right? You could have at least upped the price a bit, I think.
Well, you know, I want people to have accessibility to the content. That's my goal. So
understood. I mean, from one redhead to another redhead, I'm here for consulting purposes. And we'll talk offline. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
Go for it, Luke.
I was going to say, again, we want to thank everybody for listening. It's fun to actually break down some football here in the spring. We'll come back with a defensive episode as well. And we'll have stuff throughout the summer. We're going to try to be more active. We're going to try to make sure that the feed isn't dormant. Again, thank you for listening, and go.